Chapter 28. Joseph Zolar stood at the head of the golden suit, watching Henry and Mickey Moore huddle over the computer and laser printer. After 4 days of round-the-clock study, they had reduced the images from symbols to descriptive words and concise phrases. There was a fascination about the way they snatched up the sheets as they rolled out onto the printer's tray, excitedly analyzing their conclusions as a wall clock ticked off the remaining minutes of their lives. They went about their business as if the men behind the ski masks did not exist. Henry labored in focused dedication. His world existed in just one narrow hall of academia. Like most university professors of anthropology and archaeology, he labored for prestige, because financial wealth eluded him. He had pieced together potsherds and had written a prodigious number of books that few read and even fewer paid good money to own. Published with small print runs, all his works ended up gathering dust in the basements of college libraries. Ironically, the fame and the honors that he foresaw would be heaped upon him as the interpreter, and perhaps discoverer, of Huascar's treasure, meant more to him than mere monetary returns. At first the Zolars found Mickey Moore sexually appealing, but soon her indifference toward them became irritating. It was obvious that she loved her husband and had little interest in anyone else. They lived and worked together in a world of their own making. Joseph Zolar would suffer little remorse over their termination. He had dealt with disgusting and despicable sellers and collectors over the years, and hardened criminals as well. But these two people were an enigma to him. He no longer cared what form of execution his brothers had in mind for them. All that mattered now was that the Moors come up with concise and accurate directions to Huascar's golden chain. Wearing the ski masks had been a waste of time, but they kept them on during the entire time they were in the Moors' presence. It was obvious the Moors did not intimidate easily. Zolar looked at Henry Moore and attempted a smile. It wasn't very successful. "Have you finished decoding the symbols?" he asked hopefully. Moore winked fox-like at his wife and gave her a smug grin before turning to Zolar. "We are finished. The story we have deciphered is one of great drama and human endurance. Our unraveling of the images and successful translation greatly expands the current knowledge of the Chachapoyas, and it will rewrite every text ever written on the Inca." "So much for modesty," said Saracen sarcastically. "Do you know precisely where the treasure is buried?" Charles Oxley asked. Henry Moore shrugged. "I can't say precisely." Saracen moved forward, tight-lipped and angry. "I'd like to ask if our illustrious codebreakers have the slightest idea in hell what they're doing." "What do you want?" Moore stated coldly, an arrow that points to X marks the spot. "Yes, damn it, that's exactly what we want." Zolar smiled condescendingly. "Let's get down to the hard facts, Dr. Moore. What can you tell us?" "You'll be happy to learn," Mickey Moore answered for her husband, "that, incredible as it sounds, the golden chain is only a small part of the treasure's stockpile. The inventory my husband and I have deciphered records at least another 40 or more tons of ceremonial ornaments and vessels, headdresses, breastplates, necklaces, and solid gold and silver objects that each took 10 men to carry. There were also massive bundles of sacred textiles, at least 20 golden-cased mummies, and over 50 ceramic pots filled with precious gems. If given more time, we can give you a complete breakdown." Zolar, Saracen, and Oxley stared at Mickey, their eyes unblinking through the masks, their expressions of insatiable greed well hidden. For several moments there wasn't a sound except their breathing and the whir of the printer. Even for men used to dealing in million-dollar sums, The extent of Huascar's golden wealth went far beyond their wildest imaginings. "You paint a glowing picture," said Zolar finally. "But do the symbols on the mummy's case tell us where the treasure is buried?" "It's not buried in the strict sense of the word," said Henry Moore. He stared at Zolar, waiting for him to react to his statement. Zolar stood there impassively. "According to the narrative engraved on the suit," Moore explained, "the hoard was secreted in a cavern on a river." Saracen's eyes flashed with sudden disappointment. "Any cavern by a well-traveled river would have been discovered long before now and the treasure removed." Oxley shook his head. "It's not likely a golden chain that took 200 men to lift could have vanished a second time." "Nor an inventory as vast as the Moors describe," added Zolar. "As an acknowledged expert on Inca antiquities, I'd be aware of any artifacts identified as belonging to Huascar that have made their way onto the market. No one who discovered such a cache could keep it secret." "Maybe we've placed too much trust in the good doctor and his wife," said Saracen. "How do we know they're not leading us down the garden path?" "Who are you to talk about trust?" Moore said quietly. "You locked my wife and me inside this concrete dungeon without windows for 4 days, and you don't trust us? You people must enjoy childish games." "You have no grounds for complaint," Oxley told him. "You and Mrs. Moore are being paid extremely well." Moore gave Oxley an impassive look. "As I was about to say, after the Incas and their Chachapoyan guards deposited Huascar's vast store of treasure in the cavern, they covered the entrance to a long passageway that led to it. Then they blended the soil and rocks to make it look natural, and planted native plants over the area to make certain the passage to the cavern was never found again." "Is there a description of the terrain around the entrance to the cavern?" Zolar asked. "Only that it is on a rounded peak of a steep-sided island in an inland sea." "Wait a moment," snapped Oxley. "You said the cavern was near a river." Moore shook his head. "If you had listened, you'd have heard me say the cavern was on a river." Saracen stared angrily at Moore. "What ridiculous myth are you handing us? A cavern on a river, on an island, in an inland sea? Took a wrong turn in your translation, didn't you, Doc?" "There is no mistake," said Moore firmly. "Our analysis is correct." "The use of the word river could be purely symbolic," suggested Mickey Moore. "So could the island," Saracen retorted. "Perhaps you'd get a better perspective if you heard our entire interpretation," offered Henry Moore. "Please spare us the details," said Zolar. "We're already familiar with how Huascar smuggled his kingdom's treasury from under the collective noses of his brother Atahualpa and Francisco Pizarro. Our only interest is the direction General Nimlap sailed the treasure fleet and the exact location where he hid the hoard." The Moors exchanged glances. Mickey gave Henry an affirmative nod, and he turned to Zolar. "All right, since we're partners." He paused to scan a page rolled out by the printer. "The pictographs on the suit tell us that the treasure was carried to a coastal port and loaded on a great number of ships. The voyage north lasted a total of 86 days. The final 12 days were spent sailing across an inland sea until they came to a small island with high, steep walls that rose out of the water like a great stone temple. There the Incas beached their ships, unloaded the treasure, and carried it down a passageway to a cavern deep inside the island. At this point, however you interpret it, the glyphs claim the gold hoard was stashed beside the banks of a river." Oxley unrolled a map of the Western Hemisphere and traced the sea route from Peru past Central America and along the Pacific coast of Mexico. The inland sea must be the Gulf of California, better known as the Sea of Cortez, added Moore. Saracen also studied the map. I agree, from the tip of Baja to Peru, it's all open water. But what about islands? Asked Zolar. At least 2 dozen, maybe more, replied Oxley. It would take years to search them all. Saracen picked up and read the final page of the Moor's translation of the glyphs. Then he stared coldly at Henry Moore. You're holding out, my friend. The images on the golden suit have to give exact guidelines to finding the treasure. No map worth the paper it's printed on stops short of pinning down the final step-by-step instructions. Zolar carefully examined Moore's expression. Is this true, Doctor? But you and your wife have not provided us with a full solution to the riddle? Mickey and I have decoded all there is to decode. There is no more. You're lying, said Zolar evenly. Of course he's lying, Saracen snapped. Any moron can see that he and his wife have held back the vital clues. Not a sound course, Doctor. You and Mrs. Moore would be wise to abide by our agreement. Moore shrugged. I'm not such a fool as you think, he said. The fact that you still refuse to identify yourselves tells me the three of you don't have the slightest intention of carrying out our bargain. What guarantee do I have that you will hold up your end? Nobody, not even our friends and relatives, knows where we were taken. Bringing us here, wearing blindfolds and holding us virtual prisoners, is nothing less than abduction. What were you going to do once the full instructions for finding Huascar's treasure were in your hands? Blindfold us again and fly us home? I don't think so. My guess is Mickey and I were going to quietly disappear and become a folder in a missing persons file. You tell me, am I wrong? If Moore wasn't such an intelligent man, Zolar would have laughed. But the anthropologist had seen through their plan and called their hand. All right, Doctor, what will it take for you to release the data? 50% of the trove, when we find it. That pushed Saracen over the edge. The bastard, he's holding us up! He walked over to Moore, lifted him off his feet, and slammed him against the wall. So much for your demands, he shouted. We're not taking any more of your crap. Tell us what we want to know, or I'll beat it out of you. And believe you me, I'll take great joy in seeing you bleed. Mickey Moore stood there, as calm as if she were standing over a stove in a kitchen. Her uncanny coolness did not seem logical to Zolar. Any other wife would have demonstrated fear at a violent threat toward her husband. Incredibly, Moore smiled. Do it. Break my legs. Kill me. And you'll never find Huascar's golden chain in 1,000 years. He's right, you know, said Zolar, quietly gazing at Mickey. When I'm finished with him, he won't be fit for dog food, Saracen said as he pulled back his fist. When I'm finished with him, he won't be fit for dog food, Saracen said as he pulled back his fist. Hold on. Oxley's voice stopped him. For efficiency's sake, better that you take your wrath out on Mrs. Moore. No man enjoys watching his wife ravished. Slowly, Saracen let Moore down and turned to Mickey, his face taking on the expression of a pillaging Hun. Persuading Mrs. Moore to cooperate will be a pleasure. You're wasting your time, said Moore. I did not allow my wife to work on the final translation with me. She has no idea of the key to the treasure's location. The hell you say? He's telling the truth, Mickey said, unruffled. Henry wouldn't allow me to see the end results. We're still left with a winning hand, said Saracen coldly. Understood, said Oxley. You work over Mrs. Moore as proposed until he cooperates. Either way, we get answers. Zolar stared at Moore. Well, Doctor, it's your call. Moore looked at them in cold calculation. Do with her what you will. It won't make any difference. A strange silence came over the Zolar brothers. Saracen, the grittiest of them all, stood open-mouthed, disbelieving. What sort of man could calmly, without the slightest hint of shame or fear, toss his wife to the wolves? You can stand by while your wife is beaten and raped and murdered, and not say one word to stop it? Zolar asked, studying Moore's reaction. Moore's expression remained unchanged. Barbaric stupidity will gain you nothing. He's bluffing. Moore needed an acid bath after the look Saracen gave him. He'll crumble as soon as he hears her scream. Zolar shook his head. I don't think so. I agree, said Oxley. We've underestimated his monumental greed and his ruthless mania for becoming a big star in the academic world. Am I right, Doctor? Moore was unmoved by their contempt. Then he said, 50% of something beats 100% of nothing, gentlemen. Zolar glanced at his brothers. Oxley gave a barely perceptible nod. Saracen clenched his fists so tightly they went ivory. He turned away, but the expression on his face gave every indication of wanting to tear Moore's lungs out. I think we can avoid further threats and settle this in an orderly manner, said Zolar. Before we can agree to your increased demands, I must have your complete assurance you can guide us to the treasure. I have deciphered the description of the landmark that leads to the entrance of the cavern, said Moore, speaking slowly and distinctly. There is no probability of error. I know the dimensions and its shape. I can recognize it from the air. His confident assertion was met with silence. Zolar walked over to the golden mummy and looked down at the glyphs etched in the gold covering. 30%. You'll have to make do with that. 40 or nothing, Moore said resolutely. Do you want it in writing? Would it stand up in a court of law? Probably not. Then we'll just have to take each other at our word. Moore turned to his wife. Sorry, my dear, I hope you didn't find this too upsetting. But you must understand, some things are more important than marriage vows. What a strange woman, Zolar thought. She should have looked frightened and humiliated, but she showed no indication of it. It's settled, then, he said. Since we are now working partners, I see no need to continue wearing our ski masks. He pulled it over his head and ran his hands through his hair. Everyone try to get a good night's sleep. You will all fly to Guaymas, Mexico, on our company jet first thing in the morning. Why Guaymas? Asked Mickey Moore. Two reasons. It's centrally located in the Gulf, and a good friend and client has an open invitation for my use of his hacienda just north of the port. The estate has a private airstrip, which makes it an ideal headquarters for conducting the search. Aren't you coming? Asked Oxley. I'll meet you in 2 days. I have a business meeting in Wichita, Kansas. Zolar turned to Saracen, leery that his brother might launch another rampage against Moore. But he need not have worried. Saracen's face had a ghoulish grin. His brothers could not see inside his mind, see that he was happily imagining what Tupac Amaru would do to Henry Moore after the treasure was discovered.